Good morning, folks. My name is Fred Bagg, and I am co-chair for the program and a member of the Marketing Council Board. We've got the chairman of the Marketing Council, Bobby Resnick's around here somewhere. Bobby, you want to wave it to people so that they know who you are? And Steve Doyle is my co-chair, and he and I are going to be sharing introductory duties and housekeeping kinds of activities. We do have a little later some announcements about where lunch is and how to get to various places. So if you have any specific questions, we have a fairly small, intimate group over these next 2 days. Don't hesitate to either ask Bobby or Steve or I any questions about what's going on at the council meetings or IBC or anything like that. All of you came, I think, today, this morning, partly because of our keynote, our first speaker. Pat Jackson has earned a reputation in communication that has set him apart. He is a fellow of a PRSA, a Gold Anvil winner, accredited by Public Relations Society of America. His list of awards and honors and achievements goes on to about five pages. I met Pat as a member of the Professional Liaison Committee for Ball State University Public Relations Sequence. Pat's been honored by that particular university as a Schramm Lectureship, which is one of the foremost lectureships in communications in the country. His expertise in strategic planning and communications is, I think, known worldwide. And I think we can count ourselves lucky to have the opportunity to listen this morning to Pat Jackson. Pat?
Thanks, Fred. This subject that we're going to deal with today is a tough one, I think, because not too little but too much has been said about it. And I feel a little bit, you know, like Tammy Faye Baker must have felt with Halloween coming on. I mean, can't you kind of see her looking in the mirror saying, what'll I do that's different? And that's kind of where I think we all are on this subject. And I have been forced in our practice to come to the conclusion that we need maybe to try and scrape away a lot of the accumulations and see if we can get back to some principles that we can prove work. Because there's one thing I know I'll stake my reputation on it, and that is, well, the first thing is that I'm going to leave before we're done. That's still on. Had a kind of a bump, you see, on the thing that's supposed to go in your pocket, and so it won't really go in my pocket. So, you know, hang with it. But we're taping today, so we have to get this right. The one thing I know for sure is that any executive at any kind of senior level today has to ask one single question about everything we do, and that question is this: so what? With an Intero bang after it. Gee, that's great. You know, you got us this article. So what? I mean, what is different now? Are more people buying the product? I mean, do they see the service in a different light? Do they feel differently about the organization? Or are you just telling me that you got the word out? You know, you had this wonderful event and you got a record-breaking crowd. But so what? I mean, what did we do there? And if you analyze the so what question, I think what lies underneath it is another question. And that, unfortunately, with all of our about 60 years of work in the behavioral sciences and now almost 90 years of work in organizational research, we still haven't answered. And that question is, how do people really come to decisions in the marketplace? And that's really what I think we can spend some valuable time working with this morning, because we know a good deal about that. And I would be less than honest if I didn't say that I think most practitioners, and I will use that word most and you can argue with me, I think most practitioners don't pay attention to this. I am very fearful as I practice more and more years that too many of our colleagues still think that getting the word out there does something. And if you're not familiar with the research, then let's, for heaven's sake, cover it this morning, because getting the word out there may do something. The chances are about 8 to 1 that it will do something negative. Well, that's probably totally different than the way our colleagues think. Oh, boy, we'll get this story in it. Wow, look at this. I got on television. So what? See, that's the question. So what? Now, in order to arrive at this answer, you have to mix three pretty volatile areas. And sometimes those come to explosions, and I think we ought to really be honest with ourselves and with one another this morning and see if we can get any explosions out of this. Let's see if what we've been doing and what we know from experience and perhaps from our education clashes when you put these three factors together. Because maybe out of those clashes, you know, will come some creative spark that will help us to really look into this. Because the three things we're going to mix, first of all, we're going to mix this whole question of marketing. Marketing, after all, if you look at it, is just a social subsystem in a democratic society, an economically democratic society. It's not the whole society. It's not the whole system. I know marketing people talk as if it were. But I mean, you and I have to remember that they're out to lunch. It is not the whole system. Despite the crowded malls on Sunday, shopping and spending is not the whole of American life. And so we need to remember that. It's a social system and it's a subsystem of a lot of other things that are going on. And right there, for example, is one of the areas that we lose perspective. I mean, take, you know, Black Monday. Those people on Wall Street, despite everything that a lot of us have been telling them for years, still believe that Americans are economically rational. And I mean, they believed it themselves, and all of us who know anything about it, we got out of the market in June, July, or whenever, because it was obvious that this was tulipomania, this was idiocy. And they kept showing me profit figures, you see, and ROIs, and ratios. Who cares? Who knows? Because, you see, they thought that this idea that money, economic gain, is everything in people's lives, which, of course, was only telling us something about their rather narrow, unhappy lives, because it was everything for them. They had to make their first million before they were 29. And you know, now a lot of them are going to be wondering if you have any psychiatric clinic clients. I mean, you're going to be loaded. And they deserve it, because they just lost perspective. Marketing is merely a social subsystem of our society. And as practitioners in our area, we need to remember that. And we need to keep reminding our management, and particularly our marketing people, of that. Because if they lose perspective, they can have a Black Monday just as easily as anybody else. The second thing that we're going to talk about is strategy. A strategy for playing our role in this marketing process. Strategy is nothing more than a method for getting to goal. What is the goal and how do we get there? Not all the way stations in between, but how do we actually penetrate clear through to the goal? And that's a relatively difficult thing. Then there's a third thing. I'm going to call it public relations. And what I mean by that is the process, the techniques, the technology of our field. Now, why do I call it public relations? I know that you're all in IABC and that you call yourself communicators. The reason I purposely call it public relations is because whether you and I like it or not, you know, we would like to think we can set the terms for what we do, but I mean, let's face it, we know from our broader practice that someone out there is going to tell us really what the terms are. And the terms are simply coming down to this. That public relations is the term for the process, because the outcome is not communication. The outcome has to be relationships. Not relations, but relationships. And relationships are more than communication. So let us be very clear, lest we paint ourselves into a corner and just talk always about our communication skills, because the field and management are very quickly passing us by, very quickly passing us by. If you look at this process in a sort of a hierarchy, there are really three elements in it. You can practice simple information transfer. You know, I want to tell you that we've got a new service at Southside Hospital, or we've developed a new product at General Motors. That's all I want to get across to you. I just got to transfer some information. Or maybe it's negative. I want to tell all you Ford owners that if you bought between June and July of last year, you better see your dealer because the brakes weren't quite right and we've had a recall. You know, all we want to get out there is the information. We just want to transfer information. One-way street. But, of course, we know that that is very limited in what it can do for anybody. So then we have to move up a step. And we have to move up to true communications, which is two-way, obviously. That's part of the problem with that word. You know, we have more semantic problems in a business that is supposed to be on top of semantics than almost anybody I know. I mean, even that word public relations, we use it all the time to talk both about the process and the outcome. So we say, boy, that organization has good public relations. Technically, what that means is they have a good department, they use good tactics, they use good techniques. If we mean they have good public relationships, which is the outcome, then we need to say that. And now here we have communication. We don't separate between communication without the S and communication with the S, and there is a huge difference in whether or not you add the S. We talk about it, whether it's a one-way thing, whether it's a two-way thing, and sometimes we go on and imply that it's more than just two-way communications, which it isn't. And so, unfortunately, you and I can't solve that right now, but I wish that all the professional societies would get together and come up with a real dictionary of all this, and then we would all start using it, because I think it would help our marketing with our various clients and employees. But in any event, sometimes we have to move up to this two-way communication norm. Now, here's the problem. Even though much of the scholarship, many of the case studies in our field, have been done around the subject of communication, a few years ago it began to dawn on a number of these scholars, to say nothing of you and me out there slugging it out in the field, that this has some pretty serious limits. Consider some of those limits. You and I could communicate back and forth for years and never really know one another. Because communication, essentially, except in some very rare circumstances, is a cranial, intellectual thing. It's what the scholars call cognitive. You send me some information, and I make some cognitions around that in my mind, and then I send you some, and you make some cognitions around that. We're kind of trading brain waves here. We're trading cognitions. And then along comes Skinner and Holmans and White and the behaviorist psychologists, and suddenly they say, uh-oh, there's a disconnect here. Because you all have been operating as if people were, in fact, rational. As if they took their brainwave cognitions and translated them into behavior. Now I ask you, how many, just think for a minute, how many rational people, truly rational people, do you know? I mean, aside from us in this room, how many others can you name? Yeah, one, two, and if you really look at them, they probably aren't. So suddenly the scholars have got a problem. They're back to asking the old question that started all the research in 1936, and that is, what role, if any, does information transfer and even two-way communications play in the real bottom line down here, which is behavior? That's what we're after, and communications is not behavior. As the psychologists make clear, people do not, in all cases, probably in most cases, form some thoughts, feelings, attitudes based on this mental process and then behave accordingly. Behavior is a situational thing. We behave differently at different times under different circumstances, which is why a strategy is essential, because we need to postulate, what are the times? What are the circumstances? Who are the other players at that moment of decision on purchase of products or services? And communication is only a piece of it. The larger piece turns out to be, and we can cover this in as great or as little detail as you want, depending on your, turns out to be relationships. Now think about that for a minute. If you're talking about brand loyalty, for example, if you're talking about repeated purchase experience, those are not communicational things, those are relationship things. Because once I have bought your beer, you know, I probably didn't go off in a corner and drink it. I drank it with other people. And if they all said, what are you drinking that stuff for? You know, I very, very well might. So say, oh, I don't know for sure, let me try your brand. Or, based on my personality type and the circumstances, if it's a bunch of the macho gang out there, they're going to say, hey, my brand's as good as yours, and then it has actually reinforced my brand loyalty. But the question, again, that managers need to ask themselves, so what, you did this, did you have all those variables in place? Well, what we know is that there are three levels to it, but that the goal has to be right down here. Now, if you're not with me on this, if you're unclear about this, let's talk about it. I mean, really, what else beside behavior is worth working for? Why should your management or my clients put any money into this whole activity if they're not going to get some kind of behavior? A lot of you I know have heard me before tell about Roger Smith when he took over as, you know, the Emperor of General Motors, and he gave his inaugural speech, and it was just a few sentences long. He said, from now on, he says, I don't care if people love our cars. The only question I have is, are they buying? Then he went on to give an example. He says, I'm getting damn tired of having people tell me how great the new Pontiac is if they get into their Mazda and drive home. See? What I want to know is, are they going to the dealership and are they behaving? Are they acting in a way that means something? Because it doesn't do us much good at all short of that. I cannot pay your paychecks, he said, on people's love for our automobiles. I can only pay it when they sign on the dotted line, get their book of the month club, make the payments every month. You see, that's what it's all about. Well, this is what we need to remember, because this, whether management says so or not, is what they're evaluating us on. Some organizations have taken this right down to evaluation. At IBM, if you are in marketing promotion, marketing public relations, you have to, at the end of the year, be able to prove through a surveying method they have of purchasers and ongoing customers that the things you did were mentioned by those people as influencers in their decision. That's tough, isn't it? Sure, it's tough. But I think IBM management is not too far from wrong, because what they're forcing our colleagues inside that company to do is to have a strategy, to focus, to know what we're after, and most importantly of all, to cut out all that crap we keep sending out and drowning people in that we cannot show has any relationship to behavior. Now, if that sounds like anarchy or revolution to you, well, don't blame me. I'm only telling you what I hear every day when I'm out there dealing with all kinds of organizations across the United States and Canada. This is where our organizations are, and the question is now, how can we focus in on this so that we can show that, in that wonderful current phrase, that what we do gives some value added to the organization. Anybody here hasn't been asked lately to show what value you add? I didn't think so. It's endemic. Well, all good public relations work begins with research, and let's just take a minute here and do some so that we can really get into a better dialogue. How many of you are working for corporate, for-profit, hopefully for-profit organizations? And can I assume the rest of you are all working for not-for-profit organizations? Anybody working in some other sphere that we don't know of yet? Okay. How many of you are marketing essentially products? You know, you make something, you manufacture it, or you get it out of the ground, and you... Okay. Are all the rest of you marketing services? Let me see the hands of those that are marketing services. Okay. Heavy on service marketers. Are any of you marketing products or services in a business-to-business, industrial setting? Okay, are you in conglomerates that also market consumer goods, direct or through some process? Some of you are and some of you aren't. So you've got a fairly good mix of just about anything. Are any of you marketing strictly ideas? You are. Okay. I mean, you don't have a service, you don't have a product, unless an idea and information that goes with it is a service.
Both.
Okay. Okay, well, that's That's a pretty good mix. That ought to get us going.
Well, if we're going to talk about marketing and we're going to link it to strategy, this raises the question. If I ask you right now to take 2 minutes and write down the high points from your organization's strategic plan, could you do it? You pretty sure you could do it? If I took it back and showed it to your CEO, would he say, where have you been? Or would he say, oh, you got it right? Okay, how many of you here are probably somewhat responsible for seeing to it that everybody in the organization knows what the strategic goals are? Okay, that's why you know the plan, right? Well, I'm glad you know it. I hope your customers out there know it too. The reason, obviously, that that's critical is that if you're going to answer the so what question, we all know that then what we do has to go directly to those organizational goals. And I just want to make sure that everybody understands that that you do have to know those. Now, when I said strategic plan, I did not mean marketing plan. I hope you all know the difference there. I mean, I'm talking about the overall goals of the organization, of which, again, marketing is a piece, but not the whole piece. Because too often, when we work through this, we find out that that people really are talking only about the sales goals or the particular product on which they work, the goals for that. And now, in what I'm saying, you'll notice that there's an assumption. Now, I'm assuming that we need to know the organization's complete strategic plan because people in our field have more responsibility by the very nature of our profession than just meeting the marketing goals. Even if you are in a marketing support unit and with a marketing support title, because while marketing and sales, let's say that while marketing people per se ultimately have to tie into sales, the trouble with us is that we have some responsibility for sales plus the environment in which those sales are made. And if we really want to add value, we need to keep persuading our management that this is what we bring to the party that no one else brings. Certainly some marketing people think about that, but they think about it in different ways. Only people dealing with relationships think about the environment in that essential way that ultimately can shape the environment and can build a long-lasting relationship between the product or the organization and the public that it wishes to sell to. And so we've got to remember that, it seems to me, and look to the total strategic plan, because it's rare that in the strategic plan there aren't some audiences that we need to perhaps repair some damaged relationships with. There aren't some new groups that we want to reach, and they're not going to be ready yet maybe to be customers, but we're just kind of soften them up, building a relationship, and then later on maybe they'll become customers. And marketing, really, its bottom line, no matter what else it flags around with, its bottom line is to bring these in this month. Just like behavior is our bottom line, behavior is theirs too in terms of sales, because as you all know, you got to have the income every month. And so what we bring to the party right off is this idea that sales take place in an environment. And notice, if you look again, we're talking about marketing as a social system and only a subsystem of what else is going on. And so we have got a real unique selling proposition, a real USP to bring to the party if we back up and look at it this way. Now, the question in all of this is, how many variables are we going to have to deal with? And that really has become the bane, I think, of our field as it becomes a science. And believe me, I just don't see any way that we are going to avoid being real behavioral scientists. And that means further pressure on this idea of just grinding out words and paper and celluloid all the time. It means backing up, doing less, but knowing what the probable outcome of what we're doing is going to be. Now that seems so obvious and rational. Gosh, it's even rational. And yet you know and I know, if we're honest, that when we go back home, the pressure we put on ourselves and the pressure sometimes put on us by the organizations is just to grind it out. And the evidence today is that that is not helping. That is hurting. The only way around it is to become a science. So, let's take a look at some of the variables in this mix. This may help us home in on this. And while we're doing this, be thinking about the product or service that you are responsible for helping to market. Because what I'd really like to do is get through some of these introductory ideas that may help to focus us, I hope, and I hope most of this should not be particularly new to anybody. But I think it's important that we focus in, and then let's either individually take that product or service that you're responsible for, or let's get together in some groups, and then let's go through some real strategizing activities, some real scientific ways of focusing. And in your groups, you can apply some of this. So be thinking about whether you want to do it on your own daily assignment or whether it's more fun, you know, to kind of pick on somebody else in the group and do it on theirs. Because I think it's important that we don't just leave this as a cognition. Get some mutual behaviors here out of this, some practice, if you will. The first thing that needs to be re-examined if we're to add this value is the old basic marketing formula. Certainly most of you are familiar with the old four P's of marketing, right? You know, product, price, place or delivery system, and promotion, used obviously in a very broad way. Well, the old four P's have seen better days, as it were, because they just don't cut it anymore. There are tons of examples of products or services. I'll put this in, well, I'll just write service here. There are tons of examples of organizations that have done all of these right and nothing much happens. Or it does fairly well for a while and then it kind of bombs. So we had to add a fifth P. We realize that in a world like ours where change is endemic, and change really is endemic. I mean, people, in fact, it's pandemic. It's everywhere. People understand that it's everywhere. And the result of this is that they come to expect it. And so that we have some clients who make some products which are, frankly, they haven't changed in 50 years because, frankly, there's no reason to change them. And yet, if you don't do something, people start veering away from the product because it seems kind of old hat. You've probably got some like that in your line. Well, so we had to add the fifth P. We had to add this whole idea of packaging as a separate P. Now, that's one way that you can take a product that has these four things pretty well in place and kind of jazz it up a little bit. You know, the old adage, if you can't improve the product, improve the package. And I don't have to tell anybody that's been in the supermarket twice, even in the last year, that this is a standard strategy that's used all the time. But we need to think about that. We need to think about that if we're going to promote that product properly. Then, with every product today being in competition with every other, we'd have another P. We have to add positioning. Because it isn't enough anymore just to make, you know, the best lawnmowers out there. Because the competition for that lawnmower is not just the other lawnmower makers. The competition is, hey, maybe I'll go, you know, on a vacation this summer. It's a little more expensive than usual, so I'll get by with my old kind of beat-up lawnmower because I want that dough to go on the vacation. So suddenly, you know, Toro is in competition with Waikiki. See, but people don't think of that. Too many people in our field just don't think of that. They say, oh boy, we'll get those guys from John Deere. Our mowers will outsell their mowers. Wonderful. But that's far too linear. We're dealing today in all kinds of non-linear competition. So we have to think about positioning that product, not just against other products. That's old-fashioned positioning. But positioning it in terms of the lifestyle of the people who are potential customers. In their whole lifestyle, what does this lawnmower do for you? I mean, does it make you feel you're pretty special somebody? Does it save you dough from paying the kid down the block to come and mow because it's so easy to use? Are you an outdoor person that likes the smell of the freshly cut grass? And it really turns you on a Saturday afternoon after you've worked all week? I don't know. But that kind of positioning, increasingly, is critical. Well, if you look at all this, though, there's still a pretty strong relationship back to the product or service itself. And in recent times, we have seen instances of products and services that had all of these, and they still weren't successful. Because today there are seven P's, not four. And the seventh P really is capping all of the other six. Because that seventh P is perception. Perception in our mass society, rapid decision making and mind changing occurring at all times, perception is everything. Well, now, think of us as people who have some value to add to this marketing process through our strategy. It seems to me that the key place where we can add is in this whole idea of perception. What is the perception of the organization offering the product? What is the perception around the product itself, the product category, the lifestyle of the purchaser of this? This has raised anybody's thoughts, I should think, far beyond any sense of rationality. Rationality isn't in it. And yet far too much marketing thinking is still rational, dealing up here. And it seems to me that the major thing that we bring to the party that adds value is down here in that seventh P, of perception. Well, let's look at this in another way now. Let's take a look at the marketing chain. What is the marketing chain of your product? Do you sell directly? Do you sell through wholesalers and distributors? How do you get what you've got? So over here, you know, we've got the producer. Somebody's got to make or bring together the people, make the product or bring together the people and the facilities that are going to let this service be offered. And then the question comes here. Is there some kind of a distributor, a wholesale level for all of this? Is there some kind of a retail level for all of this? Or, you know, over here is the consumer. Where do you get to them? And intervening in every one of these boxes, is that whole principal idea of marketing, of an exchange taking place. People are willing to exchange their dollars, their interest, their time, and notice that. Exchange is often thought of as bucks. That is the bottom behavior. You got my bucks. But we know today that with those bucks often goes this whole question of interest, the whole question of lifestyle, and all of that is involved in the exchange that people make at these various levels. We have a couple of clients that are somewhat foreign to our general line of the clients, because we tend to be involved more in issues and things of that kind. But we counsel two of the major brewers, one in the United States and one in Canada. And it's interesting, here are these people, they're so focused, they're so tightly focused on making those sales, on beating the other brewery, that we constantly have to get up and draw this picture for them. Because the assumption, their mindset, if you will, is that somehow they're going straight to the consumer. They want to spend all this money on advertising. We're just going to dump it out there. You know, we're going to bore everybody that ever watches the late night movie. They're going to see our same commercial at least six times, which we can show you. We'll turn you off on that brand faster than almost anything else. I think you'd agree with that. But you see, that's the whole idea. If we could just get consumers right outside the door, well, they forget. But that's not the sale they make at all. The only sale that ever gets made where money changes hands for them is right here. Beer in this country is sold through wholesalers. So the exchange is right here. That's the point of emphasis. The world's leading brewery is the world's leading brewery. I can tell you now from experience, because they never forget that. Oh, they do all kinds of advertising and other things, but they never forget that. They treat those wholesalers like kings and queens. My client, I'm sorry to say, is always kicking them and beating up on them and saying, why didn't you sell more last year? See, but I just am having a very hard time, my colleagues and I, getting to understand that their exchange takes place here. And then one goes to the wholesaler, and what do you find? The same thing. Oh, the customers will drink our beer. Yeah, but wait, wait. It's got to be in the supermarket. It's got to be on tap. It's got to be at the tavern. They can't do anything until it's there. So for the wholesaler, the exchange takes place right there. And the one that really interacts with the customer where the exchange takes place is the retailer now. This is where, of course, we've seen some revolutions because these people weren't satisfied with these people and these people weren't satisfied with these people and they all wanted to get to these people. So along, about 10 years ago, came the jeans revolution. And you recall how the manufacturers of jeans suddenly started trying to avoid going through these channels and going direct to the consumer with brand names so that the, instead of being a push kind of marketing, it would be a pull kind of marketing where the consumer would run into the retailer and say, but I have to have Gloria Vanderbilt. Now that was a noble effort. And for a few years, it was a fad and they did quite well. Today, the evidence is, well, there are two pieces of evidence. One, in that particular industry, people are far less caring. First of all, there's so damn many brands that you can hardly tell the difference. Secondly, brand loyalty is a sometime thing in this country, and for the last 10 or 15 years, as most of you know, it's been in a very bad decline. People are looking for other things, by and large, not always, but by and large, than brand loyalty. So take a minute and ask yourself whether the old simplistic idea that here we are producing a product or offering a service and here are the customers, does that still work? Even if you're a hospital, we have a lot of hospital clients and this is a standard discussion. I mean, what I'm sharing with you here, believe me, is something I've done in the boardroom probably 5,000 times because the hospital administration is always talking about, boy, we're really get the patients now. God, you know, this place is so friendly and we've taken all of our police guards and put them into nice blue blazers and we've taught them how to say good morning and say, what are you doing? And, you know, we've really got it to be a wonderful kind of a spot. And then, you know, sort of halfway through the meeting, I sigh and I have to bring up that wonderful point again. Yeah, but gang, at least for your daycare surgery, your group support practices, and your hospital stays, you can't let anybody in until a doctor signs them in. In other words, you can't go out and just say, you know, is Mary going to come in and say, I think I'll have you do my appendectomy, gang? I mean, of course not. Mary has to go through her doctor, and only doctors can sign admittances to the hospital. So then everybody says, oh, yeah, gee, that's right, we forgot. Well, I guess maybe we ought to stop kicking all the docs in town. Maybe we ought to be friendly to the docs for a change. What do you think? Well, I'm not sure. You know, they haven't been very friendly to us, and then you're off into whole other areas of relationships. But you see, there are these interveners in the chain. So ask yourself the question. Truly, do you go direct to your consumer of your services? Or do you go through someone else? Take public education, just to show how much thinking we need to do around this, and then we need to get our heads screwed on straight and ask whose behaviors do we need in what order? In what order? And what ability do we have to influence those behaviors as they move down the chain? Can we get some pull sales as well as some push sales here? Or are we stuck with push sales? Say you're in a school district. Who are your customers? Is it the kiddies? Is it their parents? Is it the taxpayers and the community? This is the kind of strategic thinking that we need to give a lot more energy to, and I think it has to begin here. I think we have to have a pretty good understanding of what the marketing chain is and of this whole idea of exchange. What exchange takes place? That's another term I'm going to switch on you if you don't mind. Instead of calling us communicators, I'm going to call us public relations practitioners because I want to keep emphasizing that it's relationships we want to build. Of course, communications has a role in that, but communications by itself can't do it, so let's call it relationships. Secondly, I've about decided that, for us anyway, we don't talk about messages anymore. Because messages are information transfer. I send you a message, you send me a message. I don't just want to transfer messages. I want you to do something. Therefore, we're now talking like the fundraisers do about appeals. I can't tell you how powerful that'll be for what you do back at the ranch. If you just change that term, don't send messages. Make appeals to people to give you behaviors. Big difference. Big difference in our thinking, and I think that the tactic of going for behaviors, for mutually desirable behaviors, not for communication or information transfer, and of them making appeals to give that behavior from our various publics is critical. Now, there's another little piece in that, and that is that we need to make those appeals to our organization to give behaviors, of course, to those publics that is going to make them want to give them back, which once again separates us, I think, a good deal from those people who are pure marketers. Market support does involve this environment in a far larger way. Well, let's take a look at this maybe in one or two other ways, and then let's dig in. One of the things I think we ought to talk about is to ask ourselves, what really do we mean by strategic planning, by strategy? Because there's an awful lot of confusion around this, the difference between strategy and tactics. The difference between strategy and tactics is kind of like the difference between goals and objectives. A tactic is an objective. It's a little piece of ground that you gain in order to get the big piece. But the strategy really is an overview. And in an overview, the word comes from the Greek. It was used primarily in a military sense, unfortunately, but it did mean that the general had to know what were all of the resources that he had on his side, how many troops, what was the terrain like, what was the weather, all of those variables, and then the same thing, what did those out there that we're competing with have on their side. So really, I like to think about simple-minded strategic planning, a simple four-question approach. Where are we now? That's the first question. I guarantee you this will work for you. Where are we now? Two, how did we get here? Three, where do we want to be? Four, how do we get there? If you can just think of strategy in those relatively simple terms, you'll be a good strategist. And if you get caught up in all these wonderful systems of people printing books and so forth, I guarantee you, you'll crash in flames because it almost inevitably happens. It really gets your eye off the main chance. At least that's been my experience with it. Well, if that's what we're really after, is this long-term strategy, now we have to make some differentiations again, because we've got here a strategic goal for the goals for the organization, and then we've got some strategic objectives of marketing. And notice that I'm using the word goals to talk about the organization, and I'm limiting marketing to objectives. Now, that's just a little technique, and you may say that's damn foolishness, but I have found that that works, because when we talk about marketing goals, too often I find that we then kind of raise them up above the goals for the whole organization, and it tricks us up. Marketing, after all, has to be somewhat short-term in its focus. Not that you shouldn't have some great long-range plans, you know, we're going to be number one in the industry in 10 years or whatever, but you and I know that you don't get there overnight. And so I like to think of the goals of the organization and the objectives of marketing. Well, what are your marketing objectives? And what strategic, how do they tie to the strategic goals of the organization? Now, that's a somewhat difficult question. And I think we ought to take some time right now to answer that question. In fact, if you're unclear on the question, wonderful. You'll do probably a good job of answering it, because it's one of the great unclarities. You hear organizations all the time talk about their future strictly in terms of market position or sales or whatever. This is one of the bad things probably about the short period we've been through and are now coming out of, where marketing has been the great fad. And that is that we tend to think that that's all there is. And there are a lot of organizations, as you know, out there who promoted their market position right up to being taken over by somebody else, or who took all the wonderful profit and success they had when they were in their right niche, and they moved over in unfamiliar territory, and bingo. Oh, their sales are 10 times what they were, but of course their profits are down to zip, or to a very small percentage. They put all that extra energy in for no tangible, bankable gain. You see? So you might say, well, why are we? You know, what's our role in this? I mean, I'm just the public relations person. I'm the communicator.